Thank you, thank you. The second thing I want to start off with is last week, hundreds of people showed up at the federal courthouse downtown to have their voices heard regarding the settlement agreement that was negotiated between the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division and the City of Portland because of the Department of Justice investigation of Portland Police and their finding that Portland police officers use excessive force when interacting with people with mental health issues or people perceived to have mental health issues. I was so thrilled with the rally outside the courthouse supporting people in the morning and the people that came all day long. There were hundreds of people that showed up. Hundreds of people shared their story with the judge. And the judge was so moved by the testimony that he gave the public another week to submit written testimony. Now, why is this important? It is important because the city of Portland is poised to spend $26 million over the next 5 years in trying to fix what the DOJ found wrong. The problem with that is that the fixes are all police-centric rather than community-centric. And so if police are abusing people with mental illness, what we do is create a behavioral health unit inside the police bureau so that now they are trained with 40 hours of training to go out and not abuse people who have mental illness or perceived to have mental illness. The ludicrousness of this proposal that is in front of the federal judge Michael Simon right now is reflected in two new policies that Portland Police Bureau rolled out while they're waiting for the settlement agreement to go into place. One, Prosper Portland is this initiative that's been sold to downtown business interests as a way to get homeless people to now become invisible. And so this project is called Prosper Portland, and it's tied into another program called the Chronic Offender Pilot Project. And so supposedly when the DOJ investigated Portland Police, their vision was that they were going to fix this excessive force on people with mental illness or people perceived to have mental illness. But then Chief Reese rolls out this new program that now will criminalize being homeless. And then it becomes more ludicrous because Portland police officers now have another secret list of people, and it's called the Chronic Offender Pilot Project. And it allows for prosecution of people for petty trespassing offenses, and it gives the police officer an opportunity to charge the homeless person with interfering with a police officer if they are convicted of the same thing again. So, for example, if you get a citation for loitering, because you're actually sitting in a doorway because you don't have a house, if that same police officer sees you again, now your penalty has been enhanced because not only are you charged with the original crime, which was the loitering, now you will have a misdemeanor charge, a Class A misdemeanor charge of interfering with a peace officer. Now, this is so appalling in light of the DOJ's investigation, because I would suspect if you did a survey of people who are houseless, you will find many people who need mental health treatment. And the thing that makes me crazy is that the DOJ, in fact, has not required mental health drop-off centers. Somehow we think the police are going to be the people who are going to be officer friendly while they are creating new criminals. This is absolutely insane. Luckily, it is now out of the hands of the Department of Justice, out of the hands of the City of Portland, and in the hands of federal judge Michael Simon. And Michael Simon will, on March 20th, make a determination about whether the settlement agreement is fair, adequate, and reasonable, which is the question in front of him. Many of the people who testified wanted Judge Simon to totally reject the agreement. And I was one of those people that just said, this does not serve the people in the city of Portland, this settlement agreement. What it serves is the police department, and it really doesn't provide the kind of oversight that the Department of Justice wants us to believe it will have. This settlement agreement has created 8 advisory committees that actually don't talk to each other. And so the police bureau is building all kind of silos around themselves and then making sure that the people that are picked for these committees are people with the least knowledge of police practices on the street. And so the advisory committees are handpicked by the police. So, of course, whatever the police tell them makes sense to them. The number to call is 503-231-8187 if you want to join the conversation. Did you get a chance to testify in front of Judge Simon last week? What was that experience like for you? I can tell you, for a lot of community members, it was pretty intimidating going into the federal court. It's like going to the airport. You've got to show ID. You've got to go through a metal detector. I think it was a little intimidating for a lot of people, but hundreds of people showed up. Hundreds of people shared their story. I was so thankful that Aaron Campbell's mom, Marva Davis, came and testified. I was so thankful that James Chassie's brother came and testified in front of the judge. Anyone who has lost a loved one at the hands of the police would say soundly, reject this agreement, start over, take Portland Police to court, because that would be the judge's next option. He could actually direct, we go to trial and get an adjudicated verdict so that we can really put in place true reforms. The IPR is the most incompetent police oversight process, I believe, in the country, and nothing in the settlement agreement makes it better. In fact, what it does is limit the community's ability to appeal a finding. And so if the investigation by CRC, which is the Citizen Review Committee of the Independent Police Review Division, and as you know, it's not independent, it doesn't actually review the police, et cetera, et cetera. Those citizens now will only have 21 days to review an investigation. It's kind of hard to do when you only meet once a month. And so there are some real problems with the settlement agreement. And I think the biggest problem is that it will let the mayor, the police commissioner, the city council, and the police department off the hook, because it will look like we are fixing things that we simply aren't fixing. And then when the police rolls out new programs, like this program targeting homeless people downtown, at the same time the Department of Justice is supposedly providing oversight, what that shows me is no one at City Hall is paying attention. Nobody's looking at the findings that came out in September of 2012, comparing that to the settlement agreement, which came out in November of 2012, with actually what Portland Police is doing today, which they just rolled out in February 2014. And so if the DOJ is paying attention, they're doing a really weak job of actually paying attention. And I'm really frustrated because this isn't rocket science. You don't have to be an expert in police services to know that if you target a certain population for arrest and prosecution, then you're going to arrest and prosecute more of those individuals. This is appalling, and we need people to be calling the city hall to tell all the commissioners, because they're all on the hook for the settlement agreement. We need all of them to know that they need to stop this new project in its track. And they need to find another way, because it doesn't make sense to create criminals out of people whose first crime is that they don't have a home. And that's actually not against the law in the United States yet. We have a caller on the line. Hello, Rochelle. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. I just wanted to alert you that Pete Shaw has a story coming out today in the Portland Occupier recapping that testimony and giving a good coverage of what you said, so people can look for that.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yes, the more info people have, the more prepared they will be when the judge makes his decision.
Yes, and I also wanted to say that I think it's beyond egregious what Reese is rolling out with this Prosper Portland. I actually heard through the grapevine that one of the commissioners said that, you know, it sounds like maybe he's looking to get fired because it's just so beyond what is reasonable in light of what's going on. So
it's absolutely insane. But, I mean, what's appalling to me is that I haven't heard a peep out of City Hall. And this he rolled this program out right after he rolled out Stop and Pat, right? Which is modeled after the New York Stop and Frisk program. But we don't do that Stop and Pat downtown. We just do that in communities of color and low-income communities. Because officers can't have a conversation unless they pat down low-income people and people of color.
Absolutely. And I really think that what we need to do is push back on this criminalization and really do what other cities are doing with this housing first. Get people into housing. Stop all of this other nonsense. We are not, for a progressive city, doing anything what we should be doing. So
And I want to know more about this secret list because, you know, because Portland Police is famous for creating secret lists that they get to prosecute people in enhanced forms. And what I know about this particular one is that now you give a homeless person a citation, right? They're not going to get the notice in the mail that reminds them that they have a court date coming up because they don't have an address to send it to. And so then you miss your court date. Guess what? Now there's a warrant out for your arrest. So now, not only were you arrested for being homeless, you're arrested because you interfered with a cop, and then you are arrested because there's a warrant out for failure to appear. And so you've created a criminal now. And so what I'm just so mad. It's just making me so crazy because it doesn't make sense. If people are homeless, we should be trying to figure out how to get them a home, not how to put them in jail or make them invisible. And
that's
so
right.
Thank you for your call.
Well, and I will tell you that I've already called City Hall and complained that everywhere I could. I get a lot of, I talk to the woman in the mayor's office who is liaison with the police, and, you know, you get a lot of excuses, but I really think that people should call because I don't think that they know how many of us out here really care about this.
Well, so, and I would suggest people not call the police liaison in the mayor's office because she's a police officer.
Oh, yeah. No, that's useless. I've called all the offices,
good.
I think everyone should do that.
Thank you so much. Really
thank you.
Appreciate
it. Joanne, you're fabulous. Bless you. I support you, and you're doing great work.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
You too.
And as always, in Voices from the Edge, we're going to do a minor switch now because we're going to bring on into this conversation a student at Portland State University who wants to share with me a walkout that's happening today at Portland State University. His name is Cameron Frank, and we're going to be talking about the fact that instructors at Portland State University have been working without a contract for 8 months. They are getting a bit frustrated because they are not getting results from that conversation that they're having with management. Students are planning a walkout today from 11:30 to 1 to support the teachers in their effort to get a fair contract from Portland State University's management. And so we're going to be having that conversation, and then I'm going to switch back because, as you know, I have a lot more to say about what's wrong with policing in Portland and why we can't get it right. And so we are going to okay. Well, then hopefully I can get Cameron Frank to give me a call back. Cameron, if you'll give me a call at 503-281-8187, we'll get you on the phone. So I will just keep talking about the need to fix what is broken at City Hall until that happens. I have another caller on the line, do I? Hello, Rick. Rick, welcome to Cable. Hi, Rick. Yes.
Oh, hi, Joanne. Yep. I wanted to point out to the listenership that there has been a wonderful success in the state of Washington in Olympia. It's called Quixote Village, like Don Quixote.
Uh-huh.
And it is a project of working with the unhoused community and getting them into tiny houses. And it's not the solution to everything, but it is a step.
Right. Well, good.
I would encourage you, if you want to Google Coyote Village, Dignity Village, Right to Dream 2, Dignity Village, they could do this. The snapshot on Coyote Village is they have a public private partnership, the Unitarian Church, a number of nonprofits have put together about a $3 million project in total funds, breaks down to about $18,000 per unit, getting people into what are essentially cabins that have individualized plumbing, a sink, toilet, but shared laundry, shared kitchen, shared shower. So there's a common building. It builds community. And it's, I believe, 25 cabins on around 2 acres. But it's working.
It sounds really good. I also know that wasn't there a recent effort to plant community gardens for people who were houseless? And so the theory was anybody who needed fruit and vegetables could come and make themselves available of it.
Well, I know that's out there. There's also the Gleaners. There's the, I think it's Second Harvest, where you can register your fruit tree with the city.
Yes.
You've got cherries and apples and pears and that sort of figs, all these sort of good things that, you know, the abundance that's out there that just falls to the ground.
Right, and gets wasted, yes.
It's wonderful.
You know, thank you so much. We used to be really good at big ideas here in Portland. I don't know what happened. We're not good at big ideas anymore. But we are beginning to think that police are our solution to all the community problems. And that's a problem because they're creating a whole new set of problems. Thank you. It's nice to know that there are good, positive things that are happening to help houseless people live independently, get off the street, get out of the cold. I mean, no one would be on. No one is on the street because they want to be on the street. And
yeah,
but for the grace of God,
it's clean,
yes.
It's dry, and
yes.
It's a step up.
It's well organized. People look out for each other, and isn't that what community is supposed to be about?
Well, interestingly enough, with these people they took the input of the folks who are going to be living in these cabins,
right?
And they brought up the idea that instead of having more square footage in their cabins, what they all wanted was porches.
Uh-huh.
And so that they can be outside, they can see each other. There's a level of
a community.
Awareness of who's around.
That's
and
right.
Crime down. It's a positive thing brought up by the unhoused community themselves.
Well, I am going to check that out. I know that there was a recent deal with R2D2 in the city of Portland. But I don't know the details yet. I'm going to have to get Ibrahim back in here. Tell me the details and see whether or not this will be a good deal for houseless folks. So thank you so much.
If you got another 1 minute.
Okay.
The snapshot on the detail. Portland Development Community and the City Council came up with about $845,000 for R2D2.
Right.
And one perspective is that it is a bribe by the money interest in the Pearl District to give them just enough money to get out of Dodge.
That's right.
But not enough money to stay where they're at.
That's right. But not enough or not enough to permanently solve the problem in the first place.
Yeah.
Thank you
Well, you're doing wonderful work, Joanne. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now. We look like we have another caller on the line. No? My bad. So there are some creative ideas out there. We don't have to criminalize people because they're houseless. Now, I want to know, how is Portland Police going to determine which of the houseless individuals have mental health issues? Because I would suspect if the DOJ actually is doing the job they're trying to tell Portlanders that they're doing, is that if they start creating criminals of people with mental health issues simply because they were living on the street, you would think the Department of Justice would think that was a bad idea. But again, as I said, the city's been silent, the Department of Justice has been silent, and it's just really frustrating to think, even when you're under the watchful eye of the federal government, the arrogance of our police department to be rolling out programs that are intended to target the most powerless people in our community, and then have our so-called elected leaders not standing up for their rights. I think that's absolutely inexcusable. And so I also want to comment on the Portland Police Union's concern and frustration over the fairness hearing. I think the Portland Police Association President Daryl Turner heard directly from people at the fairness hearing last Tuesday, heard directly from people who had been brutalized by Portland police officers. They heard those stories directly from individuals. And for someone not to be moved by hearing that story, I don't know how you could be human and not be moved by people who have those real life experiences with Portland police. Now, people ask me all the time, they can't all be bad. All Portland police officers can't be bad. And my response to that is, if police officers allow other police officers to abuse community members, to violate our constitutional rights, they are just as bad as the people who are doing the violation of our constitutional rights. New York cleaned up their department because there were brave men and women within the police department that actually said, I'm not going to participate in this illegal activity any longer. That's why New York is on the way to mending their police department. But Portland has a long way to go. And how unfortunate that we're going to spend the money that we're going to spend and not get a better police department. We have lots of callers on the line, and so we're going to go back to the phone line. If you'd like to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. And so, hello, Cameron. Oh, Cameron, hello. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty fine. And we had a little problem connecting with you, but you are now here. And so I've been talking a lot about police activity, but I did tell my listeners you were going to be calling in because I understand there's going to be a student walkout today at Portland State University from 11:30 to 1.
It's true.
So if you would tell the listeners why. Why are students walking out of school?
Most definitely. So currently we have about 600, almost 650 students that have pledged and said that they're going to be walking out of classes today. Students are walking out because our professors have been in contract negotiations with the university administration going on 10 months now. I'm actually one of the students who was part of our organization that actually sat in on collective bargaining negotiations, and we're extremely unhappy with the direction that the university is taking and with the treatment of our faculty by the university administration. And so at this point, we don't see sort of the institutionally acceptable political process for students as a means capable of addressing the problem at hand.
I see. And the walkout is to, in solidarity with the staff, to let them know the students have been able to see the issues that the teachers are concerned with.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to let our professors know that we stand in solidarity with them, and if they have to go on strike, then we're more than willing to take action to try to secure for them a fair contract.
Well, thank you so much. And so you've got 650 students that have already signed up. Is there a place or is there a contact that some students who are listening, if they haven't heard about this yet, what should they do?
Most definitely. Yeah, they should go to www.psusu.org. That's the Portland State University Student Union. We're basically a union of student groups and unaffiliated students that are coming together to try to take on the problems of things like student debt, tuition hikes, and bad administration.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you calling in. I also appreciate you as a student helping and actually being aware, right? Normally as students, you got your head down in books and you're not really paying attention to what's happening around you. So thank you for being aware. Thank you for supporting the staff. I'm sure they appreciate your support as well.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. Have a great day and good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. That was Cameron, and he is a student at Portland State University, and he's one of the leaders. Cameron Frank is one of the student leaders in the scheduled walkout today. We have several other callers on the line. Hello, Bill. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. I wanted to comment about attitudes within the police department. I think attitudes within the community that support some actions that they have with respect to law.
Okay.
If you look at, I want people to think about history in that after slavery ended, we started to see a rise in vagrancy laws where it made it illegal for you not to have an address.
That's right.
And not to have a place of work or a place of employment.
That's right.
And then moving further closer to our, you know, to modern day times here now as we see it, the rules regarding hobos. And looking at what happened, you know, when they started migrating across the country, how we once again seen a rise in vagrancy laws that made it illegal not to have a place to live. So I think when people discount history, it's doomed to repeat itself, and we've been down this road so many times. But I think the real issue is that we have a police force where if anyone speaks out against something that they see is wrong, we're cornered in saying, you know, you don't support police. And it's like, well, no, we do support police.
Exactly.
But we own our police as a community.
Yes.
And we're investing our tax dollars into our police force.
Yes.
So if they were CEOs or if they were management of a company, they would have long since been let go by the board.
Right. Exactly. You are absolutely right. And I guess that's where my frustration comes from. It's like this, the police work for us, but we've created this environment where, in fact, they don't work for us. They think they're the boss of us, and they get to decide who's worthy and who isn't worthy. And when we create these programs and package them in a nice bowl, nobody's talking about the consequences down the road. Because we're creating criminals unnecessarily.
And I think that part of the fear with attacking the police is that if they admit that there is something that they are not doing right, I think there's a hidden component to this, is that it exposes them to financial loss because of the harm that they've committed in the past towards others.
Mm-hmm.
So in one way, to admit fault also exposes them in a way to say that, you know what, see, we told you. So I think that there's the plan is really about protecting their interest. And then you have other aspects of it where there's a financial, penalty for the harms that they've committed. So it's almost like they're busy hiding. They just need to admit where we are as a community and allow the community to come in and to direct it as it needs to be.
It you're absolutely right. Thank you so much.
I
appreciate your insight. But I guess let me ask you a question before you leave, please.
Yes.
How do we get beyond this, right? Because clearly our police department is not the community police force that we want.
I think that once again it's rooted in history, in that we have to remember that law enforcement became an arm of the influential and the political,
yes,
rather than community. And I think that it never got away from that. I think it's still hijacked by the affluent and the politically powerful.
And that's what's playing out downtown. It's interesting that the downtown business interests can get their own prosecutor.
Yes.
They can get their own police force. They can, and they pay extra money so they can have these services. Now, they also get extra tax dollars to accomplish this goal. What's interesting is one of the programs that's in the settlement agreement that the DOJ, that is now in front of the federal court, that the DOJ negotiated, also has a proponent for a program that's called the SCT, the Service Coordination Team, which is another one of those special programs in the Portland Police Bureau that requires people to plead guilty to a crime in order to receive services. And the services could be housing, could be alcohol and drug treatment, could be mental health services, but people have to plead guilty under this program. So all these programs are targeted targeted downtown, and they're all targeted at people that are perceived to have no power, and they're all targeted at making them invisible. And this is appalling in a city that pretends that it's progressive. And so we have to fix that, and we have to let our city council know that that is not acceptable policy, that is not acceptable behavior, and we need to call them on the carpet for this. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Sherelle. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello, Joanne.
Good morning.
Always a great show.
Thank you.
Good morning. Always. And great callers, too.
I agree. I've got some smart callers that call in here.
Yeah, you do. I just had a question. Okay, if homeless people are further penalized with warrants and citations and such, eventually I guess they end up in jail, and the jail is overcrowded already, isn't it? I mean,
that's correct. But you know,
what's the point of that?
But see, it starts to cycle, right? Because once you start rotating in and out of jail, then you end up requiring to have more time. So then, right? So you get out after a couple of days, but then once you start rotating in and out, guess what? Now you're eligible for state prison. So you get to stay in state prison at least for a year, right? And so apparently in Portland Police Mine, as long as they're out of sight, right, they've done their job. And that is not the job that we've hired them to do.
So
we just keep creating criminals, right? Rather than trying to figure out, well, what's the services that we need? And Portland Police did this two summers ago in Northeast Portland on Killingsworth over by PCC Cascade. In 1 month, they arrested 300 people. They told the public they were trying to get guns off the street. Most of the people they arrested were neighborhood drunks. 56% of the people arrested were for alcohol-related issues. 0.5% of those people had a weapon. Zero, I believe, had a gun. And they call that program a success. And so this program will have the exact same outcome. We've created criminals, but we've done nothing to solve the problem. And so that's why the mayor and the city council needs to hear from us.
On this end, we're still working on the community of unity idea with the economic lottery. And that's all I can think of over here. And, of course, supporting you and your efforts and the other people that support you, whom are numerous, and there are increasing numbers of people that are hearing what you have to say. And I think, though, that we have to we will get something going that will create an economy, an increasing economy that people can come into. People who are homeless can have jobs. And also we can further great economic ideas across the city, because no one seems to, well, no, obviously you are having impact and you are making a difference, but it's always been the case for poor people and minority people and et cetera, that we have to totally pay attention to ourselves, because we do not get enough attention paid to us.
Well, thank you so much for your call. Thank you for your encouragement. Really, some days I'm like, am I just banging my head against the wall? Thank you. You have confirmed that this is the right path, and I will continue down it.
Well, you know, we're very blessed to have you with us, and so many think so. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. You touched my heart. I really appreciate you saying that. I want to make sure people know that if you don't know the mayor's phone number, his number is 503-823-4120. And so I would start my call at the mayor's office, since he is, in fact, the police commissioner, but I wouldn't stop there. There are actually four other commissioners that also need to hear from you. Amanda Fritz, of course, she's at 503-823-3008. It's important that she hears from you. Steve Novak has been a commissioner that's starting to ask good questions about Portland Police Bureau and their spending practices and their focus. And so he might be a very good person to call as well. Novak's number is 503-823-4682. In addition to Novak, we have a couple of other commissioners that absolutely need a phone call, because both both of them think that they're running for re-election this year. And if they're not doing something to fix what's broken in Portland Police Bureau, I certainly hope voters are going to be asking them some tough questions. Dan Saltzman's number is 823-4151. And last but not least is Nick Fish, who, as you may know, is a civil rights attorney, but has been extremely quiet on all the civil rights issues that are taking place in our city. His number is 503-823-3589. Those are the numbers of your city council. They are elected to serve you. And I don't think they've been doing a good job of late. And so give them a call today. Let them know your thoughts. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Merrick. Welcome to K-Boot.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I am good. I'm mad, but I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very upset. One thing I wanted to comment on was with respect to this $25 million allocation.
Right.
That, to me, is a travesty. It's absolutely absurd.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't make any sense why you would need to steal, as far as I'm concerned, taxpayers' dollars in the tune of $25 million so that you could tell some police officers to stop doing something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It doesn't cost a lot of money to tell somebody to quit doing something. All you got to do is say, hey, quit doing it,
right,
and they quit doing it.
You know, Portland police needed new staff. They needed to hire more investigators.
Because it really had nothing to do with what they're trying to put it towards. It
exactly.
had to do with, hey, we need more money for our precinct so that we can have different equipment, so
exactly.
that we can have new equipment, updated
yes.
equipment, pay for more people involved. And it's a shame. It's a travesty. What we need is real justice.
And a responsive city council. That's where the buck stops. It stops with the entire Portland City Council. If we want change, we either need to make the people who are in that position make the change happen, or we need to put people in those positions that will change the Portland Police Force. I don't know how Mike Reese has been able to keep his job, but the fact that he's still here says to me that City Hall is not paying attention to this egregious activity that he's involved in. And he talks pretty and he looks good, and so people just think, oh, what a nice guy. This guy is destroying the fabric of what Portland is supposed to be, and he's got to go.
Right.
He's not the police chief for us.
Thank you for
your call. Hopefully you're calling all the city council this morning, making sure your voice is heard.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate
thank
it.
You. I appreciate your call. And let me tell you what's coming up today on the Boo. At 9 is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on A Deeper Look, two members of Right to Survive discuss police and government crackdowns on houseless people in Portland and disturbing trends towards the use of surveillance by law enforcement. I knew I was going to get those questions answered. At 10 is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoint, newly obtained documents confirm that the Navy knew Fukushima released dangerous contaminants, contaminated U.S. sailors on the USS Reagan offshore from Japan, and an in-depth report on the nuclear negotiations between the U.S. and Iran. Want to thank you once again for your generous support of our winter membership drive. If you didn't take that chance to become a member, you still can. Go online, go to kboo.fm, click the tip jar. It's that simple. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Richard. Welcome to K-Boot.
Good morning, Joanne. I love your show, and I love you.
Thank you, Richard. I'm getting a lot of love this morning. I appreciate it.
I just have a quick question.
Okay.
Do you see any connection within our local policing between Homeland Security and our local police department?
Oh, no.
Thank you. I'll listen.
Okay. Thank you for that question. No doubt that there's a connection since Portland rejoined the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Police Chief Mike Reese has presented two reports to the Portland City Council, and both reports lacked information. And so the fact that the city council has allowed him to get away with that, my understanding is that the mayor doesn't have security clearance to get information from the JTTF. And so therefore, he doesn't know what's going on because he doesn't have the security clearance. So we have to trust Reese, and you've listened to the earlier conversation, that he's given us information when, in fact, when he is required to report on what's going on, he gives no information at all and then says, I'd like to share it with you, but that's secret. That is the mentality of our current Portland Police Bureau and the leadership that's there and the people that are supposedly watching over them. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Vernon. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning,
Vernon. Thank you for having me on, and thank you for dealing with this issue. I really, your hard-hitting approach is exactly what KBOO is all about, and we love hearing you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. What's on your mind?
I'm riding my bicycle home. I don't live in Portland, but I've been working all night in the men's emergency shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And the morning before last, I got to intervene in a suicide attempt. Had a patient try to cut his throat, and we stopped him and stopped the bleeding and got him to the hospital. This morning, I discovered that he was in my shelter again.
Hmm.
Now I he's welcome there. I don't mean to imply that we wouldn't welcome him. I just can't figure out. We've got an overnight mental health unit in this town. Why on earth is a man who was willing to accept help, he was crying for help.
Right.
Why is he not in that unit being observed for at least 72 hours?
That's a very good question. And do you know where, was it Project Response?
No, I'm down in Corvallis.
Oh, okay, so okay.
It's part of our Good Samaritan Hospital. We
I
have
see.
A full, but the thing that boggles my mind is that since Obamacare has come online, I'm not a big fan of it, but it does make Medicare funding available, so we don't have a wait list for the Oregon Health Plan anymore.
Right.
All of these guys are automatically eligible for that, and that covers mental health. So the funding is there.
Right, that's
the
right.
The beds are there.
Right.
The staff is there. Why the heck are they turning people away?
That's a very good question.
No, I shouldn't even be asking you because you're not the one who's doing it. I need to call mental health and figure out where our disconnect is.
Well, you know,
we've got a lot of folks who need help.
It's absolutely true. And you know that the Department of Justice actually came out and did an investigation on our mental health system in the state of Oregon. And they gave a letter to the governor. Supposedly, they were supposed to be far along in creating these community mental health centers. And they're 2 years behind with no budget plan to actually build any. And so I go back to the DOJ. Now, with the police, I understand the DOJ actually created the kind of police forces that we have today, these very militarized forces.
Because we're lucky to be. We don't get much of that down here. We see it with the staters when they come through. They tend to be pretty, but our local police force are actually well trained. They do get the NAMI training and they're a pretty sensitive bunch of guys.
Oh,
and women.
Wait. So your police force actually allows community members with lived experience to come into their training facility and train police?
They have NAMI training. NAMI is happy to train any police force.
Well, ironically, our police force doesn't think community members are qualified to train police. That if you're not a police officer, you can't train police, which is part of our problem.
I really wish we could help. You know, I think what police training needs more than anything else is a culture of appreciation for the use of nonviolent techniques, which every cop has to use.
Yes, yes.
But they don't get that. Instead, they get this built up, rah-rah for the guys who resort to force.
Well, and they get rewarded for use of force, yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's built into our culture that somehow that's what makes a cop's life exciting is that he gets to shoot people.
So here's what I would...
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Good
go ahead.
Cops use nonviolent techniques all the time. We need to figure out a way to praise them for that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there were police officers in Portland who retired who had never pulled their gun in their entire career with Portland Police.
Those guys should be in the training force.
Don't
they
you think?
They should be the ones who are Yes,
don't
absolutely.
You think? Right, but
they should be having TV shows about them and praising them to the whole community and saying, "This is a hero. This is what a hero looks like."
That's exactly
somebody who doesn't have to use force. Somebody who's smart enough to solve a situation without pulling his gun out.
Yes, yeah, and let me also suggest to you that maybe you need to call Lane County and find out what's going on with the mental health services in your area, since the county is the primary mental
we're
health.
In Benton, but okay.
I'm sorry.
We're in Benton County, but
oh, okay. You're in Benton County. Okay. Well, I would still call the county offices, and sure. And try to just track down where the failure is in this system, because
I'm going to do that, because we do have people there who are very cooperative with mm-hmm. us, and I know that there are some very positive things going on in the system.
Yes,
but somewhere there's a disconnect, and a lot of our guys are slipping through the cracks.
That's absolutely true. Well, thank you for what you do. It's important work that you do, just being
well,
there at the
thank
shelter.
Thank you for what you do. You keep a lot of us going, Joanne, and I really, really appreciate your show.
Well, thank you so much. You have a great day.
All right.
All right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Lynn, welcome to K-Boot.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your continuing attention to this, although, boy, I really admire your persistence. It seems like I've been hearing about this forever.
I feel like I've been talking about it forever, so I understand.
Well, I don't see any way that they're ever going to change. I mean, you were a legislator. You've dealt with bureaucracies before. Any bureaucracy has a tendency to want to stay exactly like it is, even without all the extra baggage of a police force.
That's right.
So my suggestion is, why not try to set up a public safety special district for northeast Portland, maybe inner southeast too. And that would be, they'd be a special district, so it wouldn't have anything to do with it, the Portland Police Bureau. They could, you know, totally set up their own new organization, build it from the ground up.
You know, I am with you. The more I learn, the more I realize that we have such systemic problems with the systems that are in place. The only way to fundamentally fix them is to dismantle them and start over. I think the police is one of those perfect examples. There are so many community members that no matter what, will not call the police. I had someone call me earlier this week whose child was suffering from a mental health crisis and said, "What do I do? I don't want to call the police. That's the last thing I want to do." And so I got on the phone trying to find someone that would be able to show up at the door to make sure that they did not have to confront some overly armed police officer that may or may not have had his 40 hours of training yet and how to respond to people with mental health issues. And so we've got some real fundamental problems. I like how you're thinking. I think that's absolutely the right idea to be thinking. How do we build something that works for us? And let's just get out of this system, because this system is not set up to protect the most vulnerable people in our society. But the police was never set up to protect the most vulnerable people in our society. We used to think they were, but we find out now they're actually about protecting the business interests and the business elite. And that's just not acceptable, especially as cold as it's been this winter. The fact that we're going to criminalize people because they're on the street is pretty offensive. So thank you. I appreciate your call. I appreciate your thinking. And we need more creative ideas like that, because the solution is not going to come from City Hall. The solution is going to come from us, the people, and us, the people, will have to demand those changes happen at City Hall, not vice versa.
Joanne?
Yes?
I was doing a little searching while I was waiting, and Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 198, is what gathers that, is what governs how to form special districts.
Uh-huh.
And it looks to me like you could have a signatures of 100 people would be all it would take to set up an election. And that's a lot easier than trying to win these stupid
citywide elections.
City council elections.
Right.
Well, have a good luck. Keep it up.
Thank you for that info. I really appreciate it. You have a great day as well. So we're getting minus on minutes, but if you want to squeak in before the show's over, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, T. Welcome to K-Boo.
Hey, hi. How you doing? Thanks. I have a really quick question. It's
okay.
Kind of off the topic. It's about the Trader Joe's in Northeast Portland.
All right.
I had a friend brought to my attention last week. He's thinking it's absurd that people oppose that.
Uh-huh.
Could you just kind of review the whole idea of it? I thought it had something to do with raising the prices and gentrification of East Portland, but I wasn't really too sure. Could you elaborate upon that?
Sure.
If at all possible. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank
you. Okay. Thank you for the call. The caller wanted to know about the Trader Joe's. So PALF, the Portland African American Leadership Forum, was not opposed to Trader Joe's, even though the media continues to say that they were opposed to Trader Joe's. They never, ever, ever, ever were opposed to Trader Joe's. What they were opposed to was PDC giving away a plot of land that was worth $2.6 million to a developer, Majestic Development Company, for $500,000. So it was a tax giveaway of 2.1, and then the developer decided that they would build a Trader Joe's on that site. Well, this is a plot of land in what used to be traditionally an African American community, and PDC has over the last 30 years failed to deliver on any promises that have been made to the African American community, and therefore the community said no more. We are not going to allow you to let this deal go through without PDC addressing the issue of gentrification and pushing the African American community out. Ironically, Trader Joe's has more than enough money to build anything anywhere they want to. And that, in fact, wasn't the issue. And so I was so proud of the young leadership that has emerged from PALF through this process, and they've done a very effective job of laying out a list of demands. And I understand this week they had a community visioning session that was very well attended. And so for more information, you could find PALF online. Just put PALF into your search engine, or you could go on to Voices from the Edge Facebook page, and they are listed there. Again, I want to remind you that I think the entire Portland City Council needs to hear about these outrageous new policing programs that are targeting specifically the Stop and Pat that targets African American and Latino youth, and the new Prosper Portland that targets downtown homeless populations. This is not appropriate. This is not what our police officers should be doing. If we're not going to help people find housing, help people get off the street, we should not be creating criminals in that process. And if you want one number that you can call and connect to all the city council, it is the information number at City Hall, which is 503-823-4000. But I do want to make sure that you have the mayor's number, which is 503-823-4120. I also want to make sure that you have Amanda Fritz's phone number. That number is 503-823-3008. Want to make sure that you know how to reach Commissioner Dan Saltzman. He's at 503-823-4151. And Commissioner Steve Novak, who seems to be the only commissioner at this time paying attention to the police budget, his number is 503-823-4682. And last but not least, we have Commissioner Nick Fish, who is running for re-election, and his number is 503-823-3589. I'm disappointed to have a civil rights lawyer on our city council who's been so silent on major civil rights issues. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. I am Joanne Hardesty. It has been my absolute pleasure to be here today. I'll see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. No, you don't know what life is really worth. Isn't all that
morning from the mighty Boo, KBOO Portland, just a minute before 9 o'clock. Coming up in a half hour on A Deeper Look, Chris Meisner and Anne Trudeau, members of Right to Survive, discuss police government crackdowns on houseless people in Portland and disturbing trends towards the use of surveillance by law enforcement. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, these stories, newly obtained documents confirm the Navy knew Fukushima releases dangerously contaminated U.S. sailors on the USS Reagan offshore from Japan, and an in-depth report on the nuclear negotiations between the U.S. and Iran. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Lee Ann Krantz speaks with local author Dan Byrne about his debut novel, The Gods of Second Chances, from local publisher Forest Avenue Press. And at 11:30, the film show highlights this year's extended Cascade Festival of African Films, featuring a live in-studio interview with Burkina Faso's Apollina Traoré, director of the new feature film Moi Zafira. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support in our winter membership drive. You can go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today and make your contribution. All right, coming up next, it's Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell is up next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the March selection for the monthly Jefferson High School Multicultural Film Festival. This month, the film The Canary Effect will show on Tuesday, March 11th. The Canary Effect is a 2006 documentary that looks into the effects that the United States and its policies have on the indigenous population. That's The Canary Effect, Tuesday, March 11th at 6 p.m. at the North Killingsworth Library. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I was planning on talking about the Oregon Citizens Alliance. Scott Lively and his adventures perverting the entire nation of Uganda. Sad situation there. And I do have information on that, but then this whole possibility of nuclear war popped up. Nuclear war, huh? So I thought, well, I guess that's got to take precedence. Atomization. Let me explain. 100 years ago, minus a few months, 700 miles away from Kiev in Sarajevo, an archduke was assassinated and the world went to war. There's a lot more going on right now. At this moment, we're living in an extremely tense international environment, as an international military standoff is mounting over the disposition of Ukraine. This news was oddly de-emphasized in U.S. news organs. I just checked them a few minutes ago, looked at Google News, and you wouldn't know from looking at the front page that this is going on. And I'll explain just how severe it is. Although Canada Google News has it as a first headline, and I will give OPB credit for talking about it this morning, even though the national feed gave it the usual steaming pile of what passes for truth. Even Democracy Now! Reported the news as a seemingly done deal. I guess they can be forgiven since they go to bed before. Well, although they did mention that Arseniy Yatsenyuk had been announced as Kyiv's parliament's new president. The thing is, the parliament isn't the parliament because a lot of people are missing because of the Maidan takeover, and there hasn't been a general election. So there hasn't been a general election. This guy is now being posed as the president by a parliament that's not the parliament. Russia, the only country with an effective nuclear answer available versus the U.S., is confronting Ukraine borders right now with helicopter gunships, jets, heavily armed troops. While apparently, 150,000 troops, while apparently harboring the elected president of Ukraine. This is an extremely tense situation. The Crimean Peninsula, which holds the Russian Black Sea Fleet and which was given to Ukraine SSR by, let's see, was it Khrushchev or Stalin? 1954 it was Khrushchev, I guess, is in play now as pro-Russian militia in the hundreds have seized the parliament there and hold it by force. So two parliaments are displaced. And meanwhile, the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has warned Russia not to intervene. The situation is changing as I speak. One way to keep track of it is to use Twitter. This from the globeandmail.com a few minutes ago. Ukraine's sovereignty over the southern region of Crimea appeared to be under threat as Russian-backed fighters moved dozens of kilometers outside their base in the Black Sea port, establishing a checkpoint on the main road connecting Sevastopol to the regional capital. President Vladimir Putin also ordered the Russian military and its central and western commands, more than 150,000 troops with hundreds of tanks and helicopter gunships, to be put on alert for war games in the areas bordering Ukraine. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu